You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change, where we explore how changes in technology and consumer behavior are affecting businesses across industries. This week's episode is brought to you by WSI, your one-stop shop for all things digital. I'm your host, Gerardo Carrick, and today we are talking about the challenges of digital transformation for the publishing industry. My guest today is Attila Gazdag, president of Albert Whitman Media. Attila is a seasoned executive with an extensive career in the development and launch of prominent digital businesses worldwide, including educational media, kids and family content, general entertainment, and live sports. Attila has served in global operations and business development positions for Disney, the NBA, Warner Bros., and Age of Learning, ABC Mouse. Excellent. Welcome, Attila. How are you?
Thank you, Geraldo. I'm good. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Nice seeing you. Attila and I, we've met, I think, probably over 20 years ago, to talk about the years, back in London, we were both working at Disney at that time.
That's right. The good years.
So it's been a long time. Attila, before launching into the topic of today, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and background so our audience can have an idea of how the conversation is going to go?
Sure. As you said, I've spent many years in branded entertainment and educational content. And, I love what I do. I particularly enjoy working in the kids and family category, which is where I've been most active over the past many years. And, my formative years, I spent at the Walt Disney Company, where I grew into an operating executive, running certain businesses in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, particularly the interactive businesses of Disney. I then segued into live sports for a few years, where I ran the international media distribution of the NBA, the National Basketball Association, selling television rights in over 200 countries around the world and launching a number of prominent digital products, including NBA's League Pass outside of the US. Mm-hmm. I then spent some years at Warner Brothers, where I was involved with a lot of their kids franchises and some of their classic film properties before making the segue into what is known as EdTech or educational media with ABC Mouse and now currently at Albert Whitman. So it's a fairly linear path and one that has led me to the intersection of entertainment and educational content with a clear focus on early childhood, kids and family as the demographic segment.
Wow. Fascinating. And you just made me think about, we haven't crossed paths only at Disney. We crossed paths three times. So we worked together at Disney out of the London office at one point. Yep. Then when you were selling NBA rights, we were buying NBA rights for Latin America.
And we at Turner.
Exactly. Yes. I was at Turner. You were at the NBA and we bought a package of 43 games. I remember it was a Thursday night game. Yes. And then you went into Warner, and I was at Turner, which was a Warner company, and you were with the kids content. So it's a small industry.
Yes, it's a small world indeed.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So as you know, we like to talk about digital transformation, and in this podcast, and I cannot think of an industry that exemplifies digital transformation as well as publishing. Right. I mean, you could talk probably about TV as well, but, publishing has gone a massive transformation with several different incarnations over the years. Right. But just for the benefit of our audience, I'd like to define digital transformation as a process of using digital technologies to create new or modify existing business processes, culture, customer experiences to meet a changing business and market requirement. Okay, so based on that, definition, digital transformation is not new to this industry, is it?
It's not new to the industry, although I will say, coming from outside of the publishing business, I am observing that it is still an industry that I think is ripe for further transformation and some would argue disruption. Mm-hmm. It is fundamentally a very traditional business. It's still a very analog business. Mm-hmm. Clearly, with the emergence of ebooks and audiobooks, there has been a degree of transformation to be able to adapt content to these new platforms or create bespoke content, to some of these digital platforms. But at the very core, it's a very traditional business with a physical supply chain and, a paper-based content delivery medium. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been a lot of experimentations in the business, and I think I would guess that these experiments will continue. At Albert Whitman in particular, we're certainly trying to be very forward-looking and partially capitalizing on my own background, leverage digital technologies and adapt to new consumer habits in the way we package up what is fundamentally reading content and mm-hmm. find new ways to present them to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I were to ask you a fundamental aspect of the industry that people get wrong, what would you say, in your opinion, is something that people get wrong about the publishing industry?
Well, certainly in children's publishing, when you kind of define what a bestseller is, people that don't know think that, every book or, many of these bestsellers will sell tens of millions of copies, where that's really the exception. A children's book that sells some tens of thousands of copies or perhaps hundreds of thousands of copies is considered a success. So the mm-hmm. volumes are actually lower than people think. The other point to note is in our case, in case of Albert Whitman, many of the books are sold into the educational market. And that means that any given book that's sold into a school library will have an audience that has a multiplier of probably, 5 or 10 or even more. Mm-hmm. So with one book, you can reach many, many kids because it's in a school library mm-hmm. where the book gets checked out by many kids during the school year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing that doesn't happen with other age brackets, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah. Now, I want to open the topic to talk about the main challenges you think the industry is facing, right? I know that, for instance, the availability of free content. And trying to engage a declining readership, it's been kind of like one of the de facto challenges of the industry. Do you see the same in this age segment?
To some extent. I mean, with publishing, there is some what it's called public domain content. So classic books that are no longer under trademark or copyright protection, but they're freely available. There's definitely some free content, but I don't think that in the publishing world, it's quite as significant of a concern as in some of the other content verticals, such as, music or, video content. Mm-hmm. There's some of it for sure. But I think that, people want to read books that are, not only bestsellers and new books, but they also want to read books that are classics. Most of them are still, copyrighted or under trademark protection with some mm-hmm. exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in terms of challenges for the industry, what is it that you're seeing as the main challenges facing the industry?
Sure. I think that there are a few. One is the consolidation of purchasing power and just go-to-market consolidation. For most publishers, Amazon is the largest customer. So mm-hmm. between Amazon and Barnes & Noble and some of the the mass market channels like, Target, Walmart, you don't have very many customers who account for a very large percentage of your business. So in mm-hmm. any industry where you have consolidation of power with distributors, as the content owner, your leverage is more limited. So that's number one. Number two is how do you deal with rights, intellectual property rights, and what rights as a publisher do you have from the authors and illustrators and their agents who represent the authors and illustrators. Mm-hmm. I think the industry can be threatened by authors going direct in terms of self-publishing and circumventing traditional publishing houses. I do see some potential areas of disruption or threat in that regard. Mm-hmm. So that would be the second one. The third one is just, how do you market your books to consumers given changing media consumption habits, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically you have to embrace social media. You have to create a viral audience. It's just like any other FMCG or brand marketing challenge in terms of the changing media mix, right? So that's mm-hmm. the third one. And then the fourth one, I would say, especially in today's environment with the global economy, is the physical supply chain, the supply chain disruption. It's the cost of printing. It's mm-hmm. the cost of shipping books. It's the challenging act of logistics of getting a book from your printer in China to the hands of a consumer, wherever the consumer is located, mm-hmm. and the many steps in between that, you know, will have to happen in order for you to get your books to the hands of your customers. Mm-hmm. Those would be maybe the four that I could think of.
Yeah. And they're not, as you said, not that different from other industries.
In some ways, they're similar to other industries.
Supply chain is, you know, it would be very, very similar.
Yes.
In changing consumption behaviors, we see it across all industries too.
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about the changing in consumption behaviors, you talked a lot about how to market to that audience, how to build a brand, that generates a demand for people to want to buy that franchise or that book. Now, my question is, do you see or do you include in changes in consumption behavior also how people are actually choosing to read a book?
Absolutely. It's interesting because in the kids category, we see two trends that coexist, right? On the one hand, parents enjoy putting a physical book in the hands of their child. They enjoy reading to their kid while holding a book. That's one trend. And that trend has been here and I think will continue to be here. Mm-hmm. Hence the limited penetration of ebooks as a percentage of the total market, right? Ebooks were the big thing, but ultimately, you know, the market share or the percentage share of ebooks relative to total book sales kind of capped out at a certain level. So that's one. The second, again, particularly with kids books, is new delivery mechanisms and new presentation layers that create a different type of reading experience. There are quite successful apps and services out there that kids and parents have embraced. For example, my former company, Age of Learning with ABC Mouse, which is not a pure play reading experience, but it does encompass literacy and reading in a gamified interactive format with, you know, tens of thousands of activities. Many of them are books and reading activities. Mm-hmm. And kids really enjoyed that type of gamified interaction, especially if it's coupled with measurable educational outcomes and gains in literacy. So ABC Mouse would be one example. Epic is another service that is quite well known. It is a very significant aggregation of children's books organized in different ways. And it makes it easy, right? It's thousands of books in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And you have the portability of ebooks and the ease of use, whether you're in the home, whether you're traveling or somewhere else. And then you have kind of different flavors of execution. So one of the products that we created at Albert Whitman, which is quite unique, is a service called the Book Club. And mm-hmm. what makes it unique is that the books come to life. The books come with a suite of multimedia functionality. So it's not just you click on a button and you open the book and you turn the pages, but you have professional voiceover. Mm-hmm. You have a professional narrator that reads the books. You have highlighting of the text that syncs with the narration, the VO. When you turn the page to an illustration, the illustrations are animated. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when you finish the book, you're presented with some number of mini games, anywhere from, you know, a half a dozen to a dozen mini games that test your reading comprehension.
Okay.
in a very sort of playful format, but it's checking, you know, did you really understand what you just read? And if you didn't, maybe there's a way to go for you to go back to the story and reread to make sure that, you know, you understand what the main character does or doesn't do. And, you know, how do they solve the problems or how do they, you know, conclude the book, things of that nature.
Wow. And that becomes like a feedback loop to the parents or caregivers in terms of.
It does become a feedback loop. And further in our product, you also have reporting dashboards. So if you're a mom, or for that matter, if you're a teacher in a school and you're using this app as a supplemental material, you can very easily track the progression of your child or children. Mm-hmm. You can see how many books they read. You can see the reading level of the books. You can see their level progression. We also have a functionality that is a placement assessment test that's based on a system called Lexile. Mm-hmm. So in the education business, books are, every book is attached to a certain reading level. Mm-hmm. There's different metrics. There's different ways to level books, but one that's quite broadly used is a system called Lexile. Mm-hmm. Lexile basically assigns a reading score to each book based on the reading difficulty and the sophistication and the challenge of comprehension of the text. Mm-hmm. And our product gives you an assessment test so that when you're first onboarding the user, it assesses your reading level so that the app can give you reading recommendations based on your level. And mm-hmm. conversely, the parent or the teacher can then see your level progression as you move through the Lexile levels.
Wow. So this is fascinating because I would imagine, and please forgive me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine this is actually opening up business models there's the obvious business model of, which is the subscription model, right? Where yeah. you pay for a subscription, you get to yeah. this, you know, to this monthly access to this catalog and library, but also I would imagine it has the ability to open business models with teachers, with school districts, with educators, right? And
yeah, that's absolutely
it's
right.
It's something that pure publishing couldn't do on its own.
That's exactly right. I think it unlocks, even before we get into the business models, one of the things that it unlocks is the consumer relationship, the direct consumer relationship that in a typical world, a publisher would not have because they mm-hmm. would sell the books to Amazon or in Target or, you know, in a Barnes & Noble bookstore. In this case, you have the ability to have a direct relationship with the consumer, understand user behavior, understand preferences for certain books. You can even test certain books in a pure electronic format before you jump into physical publishing, right? It mm-hmm, gives you mm-hmm. kind of a lab, a testing lab.
Of course.
You can test book concepts, book ideas. You can test various things. So I think it's very important. You have the ability to market directly to that family, mm-hmm. which does, you know, not only reduces your marketing expenditure, it also sort of reduces friction. Mm-hmm. In terms of the business model, you're right. There's a direct-to-consumer model, which is a monthly subscription. In our case, we're running an introductory $5.99 for the basic version of the app. And then we have a premium version, which is also quite interesting because it gives you unlimited access to the app for up to 3 kids in the household. And in addition, we send you physical books in the mail every month. Mm. So it sort of combines a old school book club with the digital book club. And I think it's a high value offer and people like the combination of.
Yes, absolutely. I've actually been asking for that from my Kindle for years. Because I love having my books. If I show you my office, I have a lot of books.
Yeah.
I like having books.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I love my Kindle, right? Because I love to be able to read anywhere I want on demand.
Yeah.
But one of the things that to me is one of the minuses of reading digitally is the fact that I don't have the physical book. I love right. having the physical book, and I'm one of those people that actually writes on the books and you know, yeah. highlights and I love reviewing them again in a few years. Right.
No, I agree. And look, I mean, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I have the Wall Street Journal app on my phone and I read it every day, but when I'm in an airport lounge and I can actually hold the Wall Street Journal and paper, you know, in a paper form. I like that. I like that experience. And I think with the book, even more so than with the newspaper. So yeah. So we have this hybrid package. I think the publishing industry, you know, particularly in the kids space or, you know, children's publishing, would benefit from more experiments going direct to consumer. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a fully gamified interactive app with all the bells and whistles, but it could even be something, you know, books in a box with some additional tchotchkes and some mm-hmm. digital benefits where they have the rights to offer that. And that's not really being done particularly, you know, in any way that's scalable right now.
Like subscription boxes.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Because they become very, very popular in other verticals. Correct. Super popular in other verticals. And I think especially as in kids, in the kids segment, as a parent, and I'm a parent of three of mine are older now, but I remember when I was, when they were very little, and I love reading them before going to bed, right?
Absolutely.
Having that box coming every month with a few books to read, it would be fantastic.
It's exciting. To get new books. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's it. That's interesting. So, I guess one of my follow up questions on this, which I find fascinating, is then what are the challenges of this new environment, right? This new environment where you have a multimedia opportunities. Right, where you have a subscription base, because your business is still, I would assume you're still straddling between physical publishing and the direct to consumer, right?
Because absolutely. I mean, physical publishing is still the lion's share of the business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the challenges are, I think there are a few challenges, right?
Let me just interrupt you there and tell you where my thinking is coming from. TV, and you come from TV too. Yeah. One of the issues that TV always had was that straddling, right? The fact that they had to go direct to consumer, but still most of the money was coming from distribution deals, right?
Yeah.
And the TV industry didn't get it right.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
It's majority.
Yes.
So that's kind of like the background. That's kind of like the context I have in my mind when I ask the question. So sorry for interrupting you.
No. It's absolutely right. I agree with you. I think, It's similar and it's a little bit different. Like, so for example, I could see a scenario where you still continue to premiere books with your biggest customer, Amazon, mm-hmm. books that you have already acquired and books that have been published, and mm-hmm. then window them into your own app. But frankly, I think it's a completely different sales channel. I don't necessarily know that or think that Amazon would care, mm-hmm. You know, because it's a different format. And it's a different types of consumption, but you could play with window. And I think, you know, going back to your question in terms of the challenges, one would be the rights. Do you have, as a publisher, do you have the rights to create these enhanced versions of your books? Mm-hmm. Because it's not a given that you do.
Yes, of course.
In some instances, you'd have to go back and secure the rights from the authors and the illustrators. Mm-hmm. So that's one. You know, the second one is cost of production. You have to produce this type of experience. You have to create the animation. You have to create the voiceover. You have to software engineer the app and, you know, make the books discoverable, and you have to index them. So just building this type of product. Mm-hmm. And the third one, which is common to, you know, any direct-to-consumer service, and you would know this, is customer acquisition marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you find this in a sea of apps on the App Store where you have over a million apps, right? Mm-hmm. How do you get to the consumer? How do you stand out? How do you differentiate? And, you know, in a subscription model, you know, what does that funnel look like? And, you know, what do you spend on marketing, and what's your lifetime value to keep the customer on and happy? Mm-hmm. I think those would be probably the top ones that come to mind.
Yeah. Customer acquisition, retention, and then managing churn.
Exactly.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
It's the same old questions that all direct-to-consumer businesses need to answer.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I would imagine, in that sense, a very, very important factor is what you do with the data analytics you have now with the, with access to direct to consumer information, right? Because that, that data analytics would give you insights that will allow you to find more of the customers that are healthy customers and try to reduce churn from the, I guess, customers that are not engaging enough or opening the app enough or, right? So I would imagine that, that all of that, it's a new competency that the company needs to.
Absolutely. And if you think of more, most publishing companies that I know of, they're very good at, you know, content curation, right? They have a strong editorial function typically. You know, they're good at working with authors and illustrators and packaging up ideas, just like a movie studio. They have a logistics, you know, chain, a logistics operation from printing to shipping to warehousing to physical distribution. They have to have a sales arm, right, to sell into the bookstores and into, you know, the distribution channels. But you're right. They don't, they're not, their DNA is not a direct-to-consumer DNA. They're not a gaming company, mobile gaming company. They're not an app company. They're not a streaming, they don't even come from a streaming background for the most part. So that's a competency that they have to develop and or acquire.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine knowing about your current environment, right? The Albert Whitman, that's this is a 100-year-old publishing company, right?
Exactly.
And so I would imagine all of these changes are requiring some. If we continue talking about challenges, but now organizational or cultural challenges, you know, you have to as a company, you have to think about how, you know, what skills and competencies you need to have in-house to be able to live, you know, to survive in the next 20 years, right?
And yeah, absolutely.
Data analytics is one, and then engineering, app development, and all of those things, rights acquisition.
I think analytics is huge. I mean, even just in the classic publishing sort of aspect, you know, the print publishing, how do you make decisions on acquiring titles or developing titles in-house? How do you make those, what we would know as the green light decision, right? What's the data that you're looking at? Are you looking at data, or is it just purely, you know, how much of it is science and how much of it is art? How much of it is just purely based on the gut instinct and the, you know, the experience of the editorial team? Or do you look at data? Do you look at what consumers say or what they want? Do you look at what sells and what type of analytics can you have? You know, going back to the sports world, right? Like, it's like sports scouting. Well, that guy is good. Okay, well, do you look at the data? Do you look at statistical information? Do you look at video data? Do you look at the heat map of the player? Or
yeah, Moneyball,
they made
right?
shots and all that. Like, I think it almost in any business, you have you certainly have room for analytics. I think in the publishing world, there's a lot of scope for increased use of analytics. It will never displace a strong editorial voice and human curation, but I think it can aid. It can aid the process. It can provide, you know, an additional filter.
Absolutely. It could you know, as it happens with movie development, right? It could talk, you know, it could give you an idea of what people are looking for and what type of stories they want to read. But still, you'll need a very strong editor that has that gut feeling, that has that art, that touch that says this is the right story.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, so that's very interesting. And I know you come, because you come from Disney, I'm sure you can disassociate yourself from the concept of the franchise model, right? This idea of, okay, we have this content. How can we exploit this content in its different monetization opportunities?
Yes.
How is that integrated or layered into what you're currently doing with Albert Whitman?
Oh, it's sort of at the core of what I'm doing, and the reason I was brought on to run this business and build this business is exactly that approach. And you know, it is, you take a classic literary property, say the Boxcar Children, right? The Boxcar Children books originally were written in the 1920s. They were rewritten, particularly with a focus to be able to use them in a classroom setting in the 1940s. So Albert Whitman has been publishing these books for 80 years, right? Since 1942. You know, it's a classic franchise that is still alive because there are new books published every year.
There's like 170 of them, right?
Yeah, they're nearly 200 of these books, right? And I think it's a huge franchise opportunity. So we're very actively exploiting or pursuing some of them. We are developing a television series adaptation based on books. In fact, we have a couple of different formats that we're parallel tracking, both live action and potentially animation. In the past, before my time, the company produced two animated movies based on the first two books. And those movies are still selling reasonably well on the streaming outlets, including Amazon. We also developed and actually produced a pilot for a podcast, a dramatic podcast adaptation that takes place in contemporary times, but it's looking back to the Boxcar period, featuring an A-list actress who is a new character that we're introducing exclusively in the podcast series, and she's our host and our narrator. We're pursuing merchandise licensing opportunities. We haven't fully focused on gaming, but I think there's certainly opportunities in gaming, like a mystery type, adventure mystery game, because ultimately the books are about mysteries and kids are solving some mysteries, right? So it gives you an example of sort of some of the elements of a franchise model that we're looking to build. And then, some of the Boxcar books are also incorporated into the book club app with the animated illustrations and the VO and all these other things.
Wow. It's a great opportunity, right? When you're sitting on top of, of some IP that has value and it has only been exploited in books. It just provides a very, very interesting approach.
And, what's interesting also is when you look at some of the streaming platforms are embracing book to screen, book to series, or book to movies adaptations. And the reasons for that, I think there are a few reasons. One, it's always a safer bet to take an idea or to take a concept that has proven itself on a different medium. Right? It is helpful that a story already has a footprint, that it has sold some number of books, or it has garnered some awards and accolades, right? If you're an acquisition executive or a development executive at a big streaming platform, the degree of risk that you're taking is mitigated by some of these factors, an existing story engine, an existing art style, characters that are developed, obviously, sales of the books and any awards that might be relevant.
Yeah, of course, it reduces the risk significantly.
Yes.
And to what extent? And I don't know if this happens in children's books or not, but to what extent do you take advantage of self-published authors that are, let's say, starting to make inroads within small communities, right? They have like their fan followers and they're self-published online. I've seen that happening a lot in TV and in cinema, where a story is picked up because it had, I don't know, 7 million followers in a self-publishing chat engine, and then it becomes, you're basically buying that following for the property that you're building, right?
Sure.
That happen also with children's books or is not?
It does happen. I mean, what you described is basically was really one of the success drivers for Moonbug, right? The entertainment company that was acquired by, two of our former colleagues, Tom Staggs and Kevin Mayer's company for, a large sum of money. They spotted and then nurtured further properties that were YouTube properties, and then they developed them into TV shows such as Cocomelon, right? In the publishing world, it certainly exists. Like, I'm familiar with one example where there was a self-published book, a holiday themed, a Christmas themed book that was, and then a producer friend of mine created a movie adaptation. And then based on the movie adaptation, a large publisher picked up the book rights, and it's no longer self-published, but it's actually published and distributed by one of the top book publishers. So absolutely, you can spot, breakout authors or breakout story ideas in from the self-published vertical.
Yeah. What about ad tech? How much is ad tech being a driver for, you know, for revenue in this industry? Is advertising accepted at this age bracket, or are there ways
ed tech like educational technology? Mm-hmm.
Ad tech, as in advertising.
Advertising.
Yeah.
Not to a large extent. I don't think it's a big area of focus, at least not in my assessment. Mm-hmm. You know, there are no ads in the books, right? Like, books don't have ads.
Yeah, of course.
And most of the digital book platforms are subscription based, so again, there are no ads. And mm-hmm. then obviously you have COPA issues that you would have to be mindful of anyway.
Yeah.
To make any advertising COPA compliant. It's an interesting idea. Is there scope for an advertiser supported digital book platform? It's an interesting idea. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah, because everything is going from free to premium. Right?
Yeah.
It's
interesting. A slightly different medium, but with our Boxcar podcast adaptation, we are kind of exploring the opportunity for a presenting title sponsor that would bring you the Boxcar podcast and, you know, a brand that would align with what the Boxcar brand stands for.
Tune Network and at the Disney, as you will know, it's hard to sell advertising for that age bracket, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
So it's a sponsorships are a much more palatable option.
Yeah, totally agree. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Listen, this has been very, very interesting. I would ask you a last question. What's coming in this industry? What should we be looking for as trends happening or things that are going to be happening in the next few years?
Wow. If I had that crystal ball, I think.
Well, I mean, your opinion, of course, your opinion.
Yeah. I think there will be continued experimentation, both with formats, consumer experiences, and also delivery and sales channels. I think that there will be some emergence of a direct channel to the consumer, whether that's, you know, virtual or an actual book club of some sort where you get the boxed experience. I think it's a low hanging fruit that publishers should take a look at. Mm-hmm. I think in the kids space, I see a very strong trend on social emotional content. Mm-hmm. You know, books that kind of resonate with parents, that put kids in relatable situations and teach them values and how to process situations and feelings and emotions and challenges. I think that's another one. A third one would be, I think, just universal themes, just more universal themes, whether that's, you know, friendship or, you know, certain feelings, sadness, you know, happiness, all that. And then I think we'll see a lot more and continued book to screen adaptations, more mm-hmm. franchises that will, you know, have multiple entertainment exploitations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds all of those sound very common sense.
Yeah.
You know, evolution. Do you see, and I know I said this was the last question, but I just thought about this. Did COVID accelerate anything or changed anything in terms of consumption habits or trends in the industry?
I mean, COVID in some ways was good for the publishing industry because people bought more books, both on the consumer side and in terms of the educational market. It was also good for digital apps such as ABC Mouse and Homer and some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. But I think other than that, I don't know that it had any other impact beyond also obviously highlighting the vulnerabilities of the industry. Mm-hmm. Stemming from the physical supply chain. So look, if I were running a large scale publishing operation, I would probably continue to evaluate a print on demand model, you know, where you kind of manage to, you know, more in real time to demand, and that might enable you to print somewhere closer to home. Mm-hmm. But I don't claim to be an expert in the physical category.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Attila, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm very happy we managed to do this. People that are going to listen to this don't know the story behind this podcast, but we've tried to record this for, I think, 3 or 4 months.
That's right.
And different things happened on both sides that we had to keep pushing it. It was almost like a running joke between you and I. But I'm happy that we finally do it. And good luck with everything. At
Thank you. Weekend. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And goodbye, everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Excellent.